Link Tech Show.
The Linux Link Tech Show
is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up, and take it away.
Take it away.
Now that everyone's eardrums have been blown out.
No, it wasn't that loud.
Yeah, that's whatever you say.
There were some owls on the IRC there,
well,
Dan.
Cool. You know what? They should be better prepared. They listen live every week. It should be no surprise what's coming next.
It's always an adventure with Dan at the helm.
My RSI's acting up.
Hey, did you see the email that we got a bunch of emails, actually, about last week's episode.
Yeah, we'll cover those later, because right now we have a wonderful guest. Pat, take it away.
Please welcome Jamie Cameron, the developer of Webmin. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
You're more than welcome to. So, you've developed a nice program, Webmin. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, Webmin is just a web-based system administration interface for Unix and Linux systems. You can do stuff through your browser using it, like create users and groups and set up Apache, Samba, send mail, network configuration, DNS, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Basically, its aim is to make the simplified Linux system administration a bit by removing the need to edit configuration files and putting stuff in relatively friendly forms in a web browser.
Now, Webmin runs on all the major Unix distributions, right? And Linux, too, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, it's quite a bit of work, actually, to support all those different distributions, because even within Linux, there's quite a bit of variation between different distributions. And then on the whole sort of Unix world, there's big differences between, say, Solaris and HP UX and Linux.
Webmin's been around for how many years now? It's been around for a long time.
It's quite a while. I think I started it in about 97. Yeah, I think I started it in 1997. And of course, the first version was pretty primitive. It could basically do DNS and nothing else. But from then, it's sort of grown and grown and grown to have more and more modules, for more and more services and servers that it can manage until it's got up to its current size. But the same basic architecture has stayed throughout its development. I mean, it's basically just a web server that runs a bunch of Perl CGI programs. The fact that its architecture has stayed the same is maybe not necessarily a good thing, but it seems to work.
Webmin is a pretty, I would consider, a pretty mature project. And what I've noticed about Webmin is it's been around for a long time. It does a fantastic job at what it does, but I don't see it getting a lot of publicity and maybe respect's the wrong word, but it just always seems to be overlooked. Like, people complain, well, oh my God, it's so hard to manage a Linux system, or it's confusing. But yet, here you have a tool, Webmin, that does a lot of management of a Linux system, from hardware to user accounts to MySQL to Apache to even Perl, and it looks consistent across different distributions, but yet not a lot of people talk about Webmin.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It doesn't have the same kind of name recognition as something like Apache or Samba. Not sure what it is. I guess I haven't really sort of gone all out in promoting it. I don't have conferences or anything like that, like you might see for some other open source products. You know, it's mostly promoted through word of mouth, sometimes support from various vendors. But yeah, it is sort of, I guess, relatively unrecognized, even though it's the sort of major or most capable system administration tool for Linux systems that I know of. So hopefully doing this kind of show will get a bit more publicity.
And, you know, again, that still is, I just, it kind of floors me. I mean, you have tools like Yast and, I don't know, what does Red Hat use these days for system administration?
Well, they have a bunch of little programs that they ship with Red Hat that can do a few things like user and group management, network configuration, I think DNS, some Apache as well.
No sneezing on it.
Yeah, basically a set of programs. I don't think they have the same coverage that Webmin does. And they're all GUI, you know, GNOME applications, so they can only be run you know, at the desktop. It'd be good if Red Hat actually supplied Webmin as its standard system administration tool, but I haven't managed to convince them to do that yet.
Have you had any distributions or flavors of Unix or whatever step up and decide to use Webmin as their tool of configuration tool of choice?
Well, there were a couple back a while back. For instance, Caldera in the day when they were actually still releasing Linux included Webmin as their standard administration tool, and another distribution called MSC Linux, which was mainly focused on large clusters, included Webmin as their admin tool, and in fact as their installation, you know, distribution installation interface as well, which I thought was pretty impressive, a bit of hacking on their part. But yeah, none of the real majors have included it. It'd be good for something like, you know, SUSE and Red Hat to do so, because that would save them the effort of maintaining their own administration tools.
Now, when you first wrote Webmin, what were the initial modules you were using? What were the basic functions that you started with?
Well, it originally started when I was working as an sysadmin job, and people came to ask me all the time to change DNS records. So I created a web interface to do that. So the very first module, if you like, was for, you know, DNS management. And then I figured maybe this could be extended to do more things. So the first few modules were DNS, Samba, and Unix users and groups. And I think that's what version 0.1 contained. And from then on, I kept on adding more and more modules for more services. Starting with the common Linux ones like Apache and Sendmail and so forth.
Are there any particular modules people are requesting for you to develop?
Let's see now. Probably one of the big requested ones at the moment would be an open LDAP server administration module. That's becoming quite popular, and there's no module for it at the moment. I guess most of the requests are really that I get up really for updates to existing modules to support, new versions or new Linux distribution versions or new versions of programs like Apache and PostgreSQL. For instance, just today I was working on adding support for PostgreSQL version 8, which has made some changes that prevent the older versions of Webmin from working. So it needs to be updated to support these new open source software packages.
Does it do Apache 2 yet?
Yes, it does. It does Apache 2, and even does 2.2 just recently. I think the last release, or last couple of releases ago, added support for Apache 2.2. With each new release of Apache, and indeed practically any program, new configuration directives get added to their configuration files. So Webmin just won't typically just automatically work with a new version of Apache. So it has to be updated to recognize the new directives and not to set the old directives that have been obsoleted by, say, a new version of Apache.
Now, Webmin has its own configuration system and capability of updating itself from within itself, which is nice. Now, how does that update or whatever it is, how does that play with like maybe your distributions package management system. For instance, I have a Webmin installed on a Debian stable server. If I went and said upgrade Webmin and said latest version from webmin.com, would that mess with my package system then?
Well, it might, depending on how you originally installed it, and depending on where you got the package that you originally installed it from. Debian's an interesting case because, you know, they have their own apt repository of packages, and I've been working to get the Webmin package included in that repository. I mean, once that's done, then updating Webmin from within itself would be no different from you typing apt-get install Webmin at the command line. So it will actually end up calling Debian's own upgrade programs to do the upgrade. On other distributions, if you update Webmin from within itself, it'll typically go and download the new package, say an RPM from webmin.com, which would bypass any local update repository you've got configured, like Yum or anything like that. So, I mean, in an ideal world, it would be included as a package with as many distributions as possible, which would bypass this problem. But because it's not, I generally have to bypass these various update services and just fetch and install a new version from my own site.
Of course, as we talk to you, Dan,
that's it, one actually.
Dan goes and upgrades his Webmin install in typical fashion.
Uh-huh. Maybe we'll break something, but you know what? It went smooth.
I mean, I'm doing the same thing here, you know?
And
let's all upgrade Webmin right now.
I wanted to pull in the Apache just to check it out, the Apache, because I haven't looked at it in a little while. And it said, you know, the module said it would have to install it. And before I can install it, I should probably upgrade Webmin, and I did that. And, wow, you know, it's...
The version that you're using Debian there.
Yeah, I did the and it
was pretty quick.
So easy. It is very quick.
Yeah. It's nice.
If you're running on Debian there, it can get a bit tricky.
It's pretty quick and responsive.
Mm.
Not tricky at all. It was pretty smooth.
Yeah, I have to say that the user interface needs some work. I'm not much of a graphic artist, so the user interface can be a bit plain, or some of the other standard default interfaces can be a bit graphic heavy. That's one area that it could be improved in, is getting some nice looking, stylish but still simple user interface.
Yeah, but you know what the thing is? I mean, it might look, to some people it might look kind of plain, but...
It works.
It freaking works.
And it works well.
And it works great.
Oh, I guess that's...
And, you always hear people are like, one of the biggest things that I heard recently, well, I should say a couple years ago, from the Apple community... That's gonna love it. They're like, we got a graphical interface for Apache, but Webmin has always had that. I mean, you could really get down.
Well, if Apple doesn't install it, then it doesn't exist.
Configuring Apache and with the Webmin interface.
If Apple didn't release it, then it never existed before. You know that, Dan, by now.
Yes. Well. But what are they?
Well, I'm not familiar with Apple's Apache interface.
You're lucky.
What is the some of the downsides to running Webmin, or some of the gotchas, or what are some of the reasons that people might be concerned about running Webmin? I mean, one of them I can see is maybe security, with regards to people accessing the configuration capabilities of your system through a web browser. What are the concerns people have?
Well, I guess security is probably not a big concern, because it's all password protected and it can run in SSL mode, so it's likely to be as secure as SSH is. Probably the people who would want to think about, you know, whether they really want to use it or not, are advanced system administrators. People who are, you know, having all their configuration files on the system generated by programs, or who have made extensive comments in their configuration file that they want to preserve. Because Webmin works by just basically reading in and modifying, you know, your various configuration files. So, you know, if your Apache configuration is generated by some clever script that you wrote, then you don't want to be using Webmin to also manage your Apache configuration, because, you know, they're going to run into each other. And of course you need to have some level of Linux system administration experience to use Webmin. You have to have like a basic knowledge of like what a user is, what a group is, what a DNS domain is. So if you're a complete total neophyte, then it's not likely to be the tool for you.
I see. But I mean, it's...
Why Perl and not like PHP or something like that?
I guess Perl was chosen because that was... I don't think PHP was even around at the time I started developing Webmin. That would be the main reason it's been in Perl. Furthermore, I don't think PHP has really the capabilities to develop a large-scale application like this. It'd be quite difficult to, say, write an entire web server in PHP, which is what I've done in Webmin. And, you know, probably nice features for parsing files using regular expressions and so forth. Perl is certainly the easiest language to write it in, even though it's not exactly a clean language. Probably a better question is, why not write it in, say, Java or something like that? Which you certainly could do, and it would certainly be a lot cleaner, but would take a lot more effort. But at this stage, you know, so much stuff has been done in Webmin and Perl that there's no way it's ever going to switch to another language.
Now, are you a Perl developer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do a lot of Perl work, some Python as well, Java, but, you know, mostly Perl.
So how large is the Webmin team right now?
Team? No, there's just me, really.
You're right.
Apart from people who submit translations. As for the core of Webmin, I'm it, basically. I'm the coder. And there's quite a lot of additional modules that people have developed and that you can download and install. And I'm not sure how many people are actively working on those. You know, there must be like 100 or so modules that are out there that other people have developed. And then, you know, there are people who send in to me translations for other languages, you know, languages other than English, and they're getting included in the core. Those are mostly just, you know, text files that define new, new strings in different languages. But as for the core development, yeah, it's just me. I do accept patches from people occasionally, though.
Now, do you purposefully keep it that way? I mean, are you looking to not expand, you know, the development team of Webmin? You want to kind of keep it under your control?
Well, I guess it has a sort of modular design. So if someone else wants to, create a new module for some purpose that's not currently covered by Webmin, then they can do that without necessarily having to, work with me. They can develop a module and make it available for download completely independently of the core. So unlike some software, it doesn't have to be a big monolithic project which is developed by a big team. It can be kind of distributed. That said, I do welcome patches or changes or suggestions to the core of the core of Webmin if people are interested. And quite a few people have submitted patches and sometimes even entire new modules over time. Like, for instance, there's a module in there for managing postfix, and that was contributed completely by developers at Mandrake.
So now I'm looking at the other stuff section about the author, about mm-hmm. you, and
yeah.
I've noticed that for like the let's say past six or seven years, you've actually had positions where you were developing Webmin as a career. For various companies, correct?
Yeah, I have done quite a bit of sort of contract work for other companies that want to develop products that are based on Webmin or use Webmin as the basis for their administration interface. And so there are companies out there that use it as the basis to create a UI for, say, a spam filtering appliance, backup appliance, things like that. So yeah, I've picked up a fair bit of contract work in that area, and you know, most of those changes are specific to, you know, the particular customer's application, and they're implemented as modules, but don't become part of the standard Webmin. So yeah, it's a nice way for me to sort of support the core development of Webmin.
Now, do they not make it into the standard release of Webmin because they're tweaked for a specific environment, or is it because that the company doesn't want to release it?
Typically both. I mean, they're modules that are developed to support, say, to provide a user interface for some specific piece of software that the company has developed or some specific appliance they've developed. So in most cases, these modules wouldn't be particularly useful to anyone else anyway. And even if they were useful, most of the companies wouldn't be interested in giving away software that they've paid to have developed. But that said, as part of a lot of this development, changes do get made to the core of Webmin to, you know, fix bugs or add new features that have come up as part of the development. And those kind of changes do get included in the core Webmin distribution and made available to everyone.
And I guess now you're working for Google. You're not working. They don't have you doing anything with Webmin at Google, do they?
No. I'm working for them, but I'm not doing anything Webmin related with them. It's a really side project. Google does things on such a scale that Webmin is not an appropriate administration tool for them.
So what then? So Webmin is more for individuals, servers, and small to medium sized businesses, you would say?
Yeah, I mean, it's good for managing one machine. Maybe, you know, it has some cluster features that can be used to manage a few machines, you know, maybe 10, up to 10 machines, let's say. But for, that's what it's targeted for. For large networks, where you want to, say, configure hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of machines at once, you know, totally different and typically customized solutions are required.
But now if we get the Open LDAP modules written, you could do a heck of a lot more then with Webmin on a larger scale then, couldn't you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people use Open LDAP to distribute user and group information to a whole bunch of machines. So you could use Webmin on a single server to manage user accounts that then get distributed to hundreds of workstations. In fact, that's already possible, because even though there's not a module for managing the Open LDAP server, there is a module for managing users and groups in an LDAP database.
Mm-hmm.
So you could use that right now to do some level of cluster or large network administration.
So as you're developing the core of Webmin, and if you actually look at, you go to Webmin's site and see all the platforms it runs on, are you specifically testing this out on the different platforms and designing it for the different platforms, or are you getting help with that?
In some cases, I test it myself with the most common ones, like the most common Linux distributions, Solaris, FreeBSD. But some of the platforms, like, say, AIX and HPUX, I don't have access to actual boxes that run those operating systems. So I'm reliant on feedback from users as to whether modules actually work. A lot of new features that go in might be initially targeted for, say, Linux and BSD only, meaning I don't necessarily have to worry about supporting that module, particular module on AIX or something. And a lot of features are for managing services that only exist on Linux. For instance, there was one recently that I wrote for setting up a Linux box as an LDAP client to get its users and groups from an LDAP server. And AIX doesn't really have any capability like that, so there's no need to worry about supporting AIX with these new features.
So I see you worked for Caldera a few years back.
Hmm.
How does the whole SCO situation make you feel?
Hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, back when I was working for them, they were doing some good work. You know, they had their own Linux distribution, and which is pretty cool. And they were supporting the development of Webmin even. But it seems that these days they've taken a completely different tack, and I don't think they're doing really any development on anything at all. It seems that they're getting most of their income from suing people. So, but I left well before. Before all that started to happen, fortunately.
Now, did you leave because you were finished, or did you leave because you saw some writing on the wall there? And by finished?
Oh, they terminated my contract.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't quit. They fired me.
So I see,
I guess, giving away a Linux distribution wasn't making very much money for them.
Yeah, that's what they said. Webmin not only manages Unix and Linux-based systems, but it'll also do Windows.
That Windows support is really a work in progress at the moment. It's extremely alpha-level quality. But it does run on Windows, and you can manage a few Windows services successfully, like, things that get run at boot up and a few open source applications like Apache that also run on Windows. But I would urge anyone who's considering running on Webmin on Windows to avoid it for now, because it's still extremely experimental.
So as I look down this list and I see all the different things that are offered, at the bottom it says generic Linux. So if my distribution, like let's say for instance I run Arch Linux, and I said, well, maybe I want to get Webmin to run under Arch Linux. And I could say, well, it's generic Linux, possibly, is what it could be. Does that mean that what I'm going to end up having to do is tweak the configuration files for it so that it's, specific to my distribution by hand, because that's not in here yet?
Absolutely, yeah. That is exactly what will happen, unfortunately. I mean, when Webmin is installed, it detects what Linux distribution and what operating system you're running, and it uses that to decide where various configuration files are located on the system. So, for instance, the Apache configuration file, httpd.conf, is in a different place on practically every Linux distro. That Webmin's operating system detection allows it to work out where to look for that file based on the OS, based on the distribution that you're running. And of course, if it can't work out what distribution you're running and it falls back to that generic Linux case, then it'll just use some location like user local, Apache, etc, httpd.conf, which is probably not going to work for you. So in that case, When you go into, say, the Apache module in Webmin, it'll say, sorry, I couldn't find Apache. But there's a little link up in the corner called, saying, module config. And you can click on that, and you can adjust where the paths that Webmin uses to find the Apache configuration file. So you could get it working on your non-supported Linux distribution.
So when I install Webmin, and if I upgrade or install a new module, it might be the possibility that when I click on the module, it comes back and says to me, "Oh, you know, I can't find the configuration file." So then you'd have to manually configure that. Now, what if I notice a module in Webmin for a service I don't have, like say Jabber IM service? Can I delete that module? Or do I have to keep seeing it in there?
Yes, you can delete a module. You can delete it, or better still, you can just hide it. If you go to the, there's a module called Webmin Users. If you go in there, and then you click on your root or admin login, you'll bring up a page where all the modules that you have access to are checked, and you can deselect modules that you're not interested in.
Oh, yeah,
in fact, I think there's even a button in there you can click on to automatically hide modules or services that aren't installed on your system, so you don't see all this stuff like Jabber and maybe Majordomo that you don't even have installed.
Okay, yeah, I see that. There you go. Ah, so you can really get down and dirty as to what you don't want to see, how you want it to look, and you could even parcel out user accounts to this. So if you say you had somebody, an administrator that would just only do user accounts on a system, and they go into Webmin, that's all they're going to see is user accounts. And you can create all those logins and everything right through Webmin as the administrator, correct? Is that how it works?
Yes, absolutely. You can create multiple Webmin logins, and you can give each one of them can be given access to a subset of modules, and furthermore, they can be restricted within that module. So you might want to give some guy the permission to, say, create new Unix user accounts, but you don't want him to be able to edit the root password, so you can set that up in Webmin.
So now, after our listeners hear how wonderful this tool is on this show, they're all going to want to go out and install Webmin. And of course,
please do.
Just about every distribution has a package for it, and it's not that hard to install yourself under your distribution too. Like under Slackware, I've installed it without a problem. What do you recommend then? Is the first thing that they do after they install Webmin from a security standpoint? Because obviously, you don't want this thing accessible to the whole world. I would assume you'd really want to limit it to what's accessible from it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you should definitely do is turn on SSL encryption. There's a Perl module called /net:/SSLEAY that Webmin can make use of to run in SSL mode, which means that all traffic between it and the browser is encrypted. So if you don't have that module yet, you should definitely install it, which you can actually do from within Webmin itself. And once it's installed, Webmin will run in SSL mode, which protects your root password from being sniffed by potential attackers. And another good thing you can do.
Let me ask you a quick question about that. Let me ask you a quick question about that. Is that the SSL encryption module that's under Webmin configuration that you were talking about?
That icon under Webmin configuration is a page for where you can actually turn on SSL. But if you go in there, you might see that it displays a message saying, "Sorry, you need to have this particular Perl module installed before Webmin can run in SSL mode." But of course, if you don't see that message, it means you've already got that Perl module installed, so you don't have to worry.
So
on a distribution like Debian, it probably got installed automatically as part of the Webmin setup process.
So does that require you to be running Apache SSL then too? And have Apache SSL already configured?
No, Webmin, no. Webmin doesn't actually use Apache at all. It has its own built-in web server, so which supports SSL. So you know, you don't have to be running Apache in SSL mode. You don't even have to have Apache installed. In fact, you know, it'd be very difficult for Webmin to run as under Apache because Apache doesn't like to run programs, you know, with root privileges in the first place. That's the reason Webmin has this. It has its own included web server.
So you simply just click that in the configuration process, and it'll set all that up for you, the SSL and everything, and you'll be good to go. Is what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. And
so take us through some of the functions that you have available on Webmin.
Well, let's see now. If you go to say the you click on the system. If you go to the system category, and then you can look at say there's a module called disk and network file systems. If you click on that, you can see all the file systems that are mounted on your server, you know, where they're coming from. They could be network file systems, you know, from Windows servers, Linux servers, whatever, or from local disk. And you can use this module to, say, mount new file systems. This is one of the most commonly used modules. There's one under that same category called users and groups. You click on that, it'll bring up a list of all the users, Unix users on your system and all the Unix groups. And you can add new users and assign users to groups. Things like that. There's another handy one called under the system category called running processes. That's basically like your piece, except that it displays it in a web browser, and you can, you know, click on processes to kill them or change their priority or see what they're doing and so forth. There's quite a lot of modules in there. I'd suggest people, you know, sort of go through themselves, see. You know, see what they're interested in.
And what's this user min that I see in there?
That's sort of like a complement to Webmin. That's a separate program that uses a lot of the same code base, and is designed for non-root users to log in and do things with their account. Typically things like reading mail, changing their passwords, and so forth. So user min is like a totally separate project and a separate application that I developed that you can configure in Webmin.
That's pretty neat. That is pretty neat. So now, UserMin is like a light version of Webmin for general users, and that is a simple install click away.
Yes, you can install it from within Webmin.
Does that run on port 10,000 also?
No, it runs on port 20,000.
Ah, okay.
So they don't clash with each other.
Oh, all right.
Now that's pretty cool.
That is sweet.
And you said you can do things with UserMin like reading your mail and stuff like that too?
Yeah, I mean probably the most common use for it is a web mail interface. So yeah, users can go in and read their, you know, mail in their mail file and send mail and stuff like that. So it's similar in a way to tools like Squirrel Mail.
Very cool.
That is good.
Very cool indeed.
Wow. Pat, what do you think? Are you too busy looking at porn?
No, I'm having fun. My laptop's in the shop, so I'm playing with Alan's Nokia 770, and it's really nice. The only thing, it's a little difficult typing with a little stylus tapper.
Will Webmin manage a Nokia 770?
It's Linux, should.
We should install it on there and find out.
Yeah. Yeah, if you've got enough disk space, you could theoretically install it.
Well, we could just start deleting stuff off of there. Alan won't care.
No, I don't think so.
It's up to about 10 meg at the moment, unfortunately. So
10 meg. Well, if you wanted to, could you Could you weed out modules then? You know, to bring it down?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, on my website, I have like a minimal version available for download as well, which is just like the real core modules that that you can't live without. So you could install that and then go and just add on modules for things that you really need.
So what are the up-and-coming big things for Webmin? Like, what do we, what can we see coming down the pike in the future? I mean, you mentioned better LDAP support, open LDAP support. What else do you see?
Well, there's a lot of work going on in supporting new Linux distributions, that kind of thing. We've got to keep up with whatever the latest Fedora release is, latest Debian release. I mean, Debian's coming up for a major new release soon called Etch that I need to add support for. So, yeah, that's one of the major areas. I'm looking at a module for configuring sudo as well. One major feature that's going to go into the next release is support for XML RPC. So this is lets other developers call functions in Webmin to do some of the things that Webmin does programmatically, like, say, you know, creating users and mail aliases and all that kind of thing.
So you have a module to help you configure and install Bash Potter in the works, right?
Which one?
Bash. Don't tell me you haven't heard of Bash Potter.
Never heard of it, sorry.
Oh, look at that. He's just trying to plug his own stuff again. Bastard. Why don't you create the module under the third-party modules, and it could be in...
You know, I would love to, but it everything is run in Perl, and I just, you know, I don't want to get RSI from typing all the brackets in, you know?
The curly brackets. And slashes.
So I noticed that if somebody were interested in like, maybe working on some stuff, or even if they wanted to write a Bash Potter module, they should probably go over to the Webmin website, look under the modules, third-party modules, see if there's anything that is already being worked on. And if not, they, you know, or if they're interested in contributing, I saw that there was a link there to a wish list.
What's on the wish list, let's say?
This wish list for new projects, although I don't... I see, you know, a bunch of different things in there.
Active Directory?
Yeah, that one's a bit out of date, actually. Someone else set that up for me. Yeah, that one might be a while in coming.
What might be a while in coming?
Yeah, I mean, there's documentation on the site on, you know, how to develop modules.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, if someone hasn't already written the module that you're interested in, then, you know, look at the documentation and start coding. If you know Perl and you know CGI, it's not too hard.
What license is Webmin released under?
BSD.
BSD license.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I was looking here at some of the modules and I'm seeing, you know, a mixture of GPL or freeware or some other licenses in here. I was just curious.
Yeah, well, the core is under the BSD license, but there's nothing to stop anyone else releasing modules under whatever license they feel like.
What about wireless capability? Configuring
that's a good area that I haven't supported yet. I mean, there's a module for doing network configuration that can handle, you know, your basic Ethernet interfaces, but wireless is a bit more complicated. So that would actually be a good idea for something to add, because, you know, you actually got to go through the process of finding a network and, you know, configuring your network interface to connect to it and so forth.
There you go, Lent Allen. There's a project for you to do on your spare time instead of playing that game of chance.
Dum, 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 dum.
So I noticed over on the theme site, I'm looking at the themes. I see standard Webmin modules are listed below. I see a Caldera theme and an MSC Linux theme. Are those themes that were derived from your work with those companies?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the Caldera theme was one that I developed while working at Caldera to sort of match their look and feel, and an MSC one was one I did while working for NSC. Actually, they contributed a lot to the graphic design of that, and that's actually the standard theme for the standard package of Webmin. If you install the Debian version of Webmin, you're probably not seeing that theme, but that's the one for the that's the theme for the standard Webmin distribution, which is has a nice sort of graphical look to it. There's a bunch of other themes there as well that give it sort of XP style look and feels, or OS X and so forth.
So now, see, I am looking here at the command shell, and you can run an IRSSI client. You can run an IRC client through the command shell if you wanted to, maybe. There you go. There's your IRC.
It's not actually that interactive.
No,
it's you type in a command and it displays the output.
Now, you do have an SSH. Module in there. And does that actually bring up a window then?
That's right. That's just a module that has a little it brings up a little applet, that little Java applet that can SSH into your server running Webmin.
There you go. Right there. You can run IRC through that then. I wouldn't recommend it, but
it's useful in a pinch, if you're on a public workstation, some public computer somewhere, and you don't have an SSH client installed. I've often used it to SSH into my own server and do some tasks that can't be undone through Webmin.
What about a VNC module? Do they have one of those?
Yes, there is a VNC module, and it just uses a free VNC client.
Uh-huh.
I downloaded from the VNC developers. It's on the third party module site somewhere.
Wow. So you're originally from Australia?
Yes, that's right.
What part of Australia did you grow up in?
Melbourne, which is down south.
And you've been over in the States for, 3 or 4 years now?
Yeah, I recently took this job with them. No, more like 3 or 4 months.
Oh, you've only been in the States 3 or 4 months, huh? Wow.
Yeah. I took this job with Google, so came over here.
How do you like the U.S.?
Well, he's in California. That doesn't really count.
It's good. Yeah, it's good working in this area,
California's its own thing.
Separate country, right?
Yeah, we hear good things about Google, though.
Yeah, it's a nice place.
We had Chris DeBonner on a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, they got a lot of interest. Yeah, it's a good company to work for. They got a lot of interesting stuff going on.
They seem to be hiring all the best people, seems like.
Yeah, I think they hired one of the kernel developers.
Andrew Morton, was it?
Andrew Morton or something.
Yeah, he's pretty big.
Yeah, that's the guy.
So now, how did you get into Google? Did you go out and apply to get into Google, or did they come looking for you? How did that work out?
Oh, they contacted me.
Oh.
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, I mean, that was interesting. Seeing as how they got a good reputation, I sort of jumped at the opportunity.
That must have made you feel good.
Yeah, it's a pretty large company now. You can't really say it's exclusive or anything.
So now, I mean, it's probably too early to tell this, but. I mean, are you looking to maybe stay in the States then, or you think you'll ever go back to Australia?
Hard to say. I thought we'd be here at least a couple of years. It's quite a bit of effort to move over here, so wouldn't want to go back home quite so soon. So, yeah, I'd definitely be here, at least another couple of years. See how things turn out.
So then when you're not working at Google, are you spending all your free time when you're not, you know, with your family working on Webmin?
Oh, yeah, quite a lot of it, yeah. And even some of the time at Google I'm spending on Webmin because, you know, they have this policy of allowing, you know, 20% of your time to be spent on pretty much whatever project you want. So I'm spending some of that time on Webmin as well.
Yeah, isn't it? Is there a policy of something like you, as long as it's like a, something to benefit the community or something? Is that how that works out? Or is it, does it matter any kind of project?
Yeah, they're pretty vague. Well, I mean, they're pretty vague on it, but I guess it has to be something vaguely related to computers in some way. So, yeah, they certainly don't have any problem with you working on Webmin.
Right. Cool.
Well, September 16th is Australia Software Freedom Day.
Now, you are obviously...
Really? I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, September 16th.
Are you a Linux user yourself?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, all my servers are all running Linux. Oh, well, except for one that runs Solaris.
So then, do you run
my operating system of choice?
Do you run it as your desktop of choice too?
No, I run. Well, at work I do. Some of my home machines run Solaris. Some of them run Windows XP. I like to keep a variety of systems around, you know, to maximize the amount of testing I can do.
And what's your family prefer to use?
Windows, I'm afraid.
You got to change that. So, are you using a you know, specific distribution that you prefer, or do you just, you know, run a lot of them so you can get testing done?
Well, I have machines and virtual machines set up with a bunch of different distributions, some Red Hat, some. You know, some old Caldera Linux, Debian, SUSE, things like that. I like to get a test on as many distributions as possible. So I have a bunch of them installed on a bunch of different servers that I've got sitting around.
So what are you using as a virtual machine? VMware, Parallels, Xen, what?
Oh, VMware. Yeah, VMware. It's a very handy tool for something like Webmin, because if I didn't have VMware, I'd probably have to have twice as many machines for installing installing all these different distributions on. So yeah, VMware is an invaluable program for the kind of work that I do.
Cool. All right. Pat, comments?
Pretty good. Jamie, just to wrap it up, is there anywhere you'd like to see Webmin go in the future? Any particular areas you'd like to address besides maybe some graphics or usability or something?
Well, not really. I mean, I'm sort of taking it in the direction that I want to go. I guess the nicest thing would be more support for it from distribution vendors. You know, if more vendors like Red Hat and so forth could include it as a standard administration tool, that'd be great. But yeah, you know, the direction I'm taking it in at the moment is pretty much where I want it to go.
Link, do you have anything you want to say? Because I know you're always complaining that we never give you the opportunity to talk anymore.
I think Link fell asleep.
That's true.
Oh, there he is.
No. The whole conversation, I've been kind of following along with you guys and playing with Webmin over here. I just installed it real quick on an old Sun Ultra 2 running Debian. And I've just been, you know, going along as you're talking, and it's, you know, it just runs right along and does everything that it says it's supposed to do. It's really neat. You know, I highly advocate, you know, if you're in need for some kind of thing like that, to give it a shot.
One last question from the IRC. What do you use, VI or Emacs?
Mm-hmm. VI.
Good man.
And Notepad, apparently.
Notepad.
I had set up some Linux servers at work a few years ago, and one of the questions and concerns that a former supervisor of mine had was that he did not know how to use Linux and was, you know, not at all familiar with doing any kind of configuration on it. And I just simply pointed him to Webmin and showed him all the different things that you do. It's as simple as just clicking on a button if you want to add a new user or if you want to start a process or stop it. And, you know, he had to sit there and he looked at it and he was like, wow. He was very impressed with the capabilities of Webmin and the fact that, you know, through that simple web interface, it was a lot easier to manage those Linux servers than it was to manage a Windows server. It's pretty well laid out. It's very, I think, very accessible. Pretty much everything's at your fingertips. It's a phenomenal, and it just keeps getting better. And I echo with what you were saying before, and I do hope that as time goes on, more distributions, you know, promote Webmin as a serious tool for managing their systems, because it is. I mean, it's already there. And it works. It just works.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
No, thank you for building such a wonderful tool.
Oh, thank you for your thank you.
Really, it's good stuff.
Well, Jamie, I thank you for coming on tonight. I'm hoping that in the future, you know, a couple months down the line, maybe we could check in with you again and see how things are going and if there's any new updates to Webmin and, you know, other things that we can expect to see as you finally put the finishing touches on Open LDAP and wireless capabilities.
Well, it's certainly on my to-do list.
All right. I want to thank you, and we'll let you get back to your regular life.
Yep. Best of luck with Google.
Okay, thanks.
Take care. And,
thanks for the interview.
Thank you. Take it easy. Have a good one. Link, are you there?
No, it's Jamie Cameron.
Hey.
Link, I'm going to cut you off just a second and reconnect with you because the lag on Skype is just growing.
No, you got to do. You gotta wait 30 seconds.
You know what? Wait a second. I gotta. Can you get on the asterisk?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do that because the Skype lag is just getting awful.
It's getting worse.
And people are gonna be like, wah, rah, rah,
30 seconds in between talking.
All right, we haven't heard that in quite a while.
Yeah, get on the asterisk. Hold on. Kick his ass out of here. Should we invite him back on, or should we just leave him? then we hear about
You're
it.
Evil, Dan.
The next time, then we hear about, we sons of bitches. You didn't let
Dan,
me say anything.
You're so evil on so many levels. It's not funny.
Sons of bitches. Hate you. Then people said, what? Is Link still on the show?
Did he quit?
Yeah, he never talks anymore. They won't let me.
You are currently the only person in this conference.
Waiting.
Eventually he'll make it in there.
And he wonders why we don't let him talk anymore, because he's never there when we need him. When we want to let him talk. And that's the thing, is we can sit here and talk smack about him for the next hour and a half, and he won't even know because he doesn't listen to the shows. Right?
Right.
That's it.
So we're not at the Linux World Expo in San Francisco. All sorts of news coming out of there. The big one was that supposedly Lenovo was going to offer ThinkPad T60Ps, right?
T60Ps, yeah.
T60Ps with SLED 10 pre-installed. Well, today we hear about the fine print. They have the page updated on the Lenovo website, and if you scroll down to the bottom, It says basically that the machines come with no operating system and you have to install it yourself. And it's $3,000.
$3,000?
Yep.
Yeah, so, the price is outrageous.
So you're paying $3,000 for no OS and you got to install it yourself.
So, but they are giving you all the drivers and stuff for it. So.
But what stops someone who just has a ThinkPad from going to the IBM website and downloading it?
$3,000?
Yeah, actually $3,099.
Yeah. It ain't cheap.
Right on.
$3,000. When I went over, and before they released it, I went over to price a ThinkPad, what is it, T50 Plus?
Yeah, but the Linux that they put on there is only going to be on the T60, which is their top of the line one.
Yes, and you're getting Linux support. First level support, so.
T-Series.
Yeah, see what it normally goes for. We're on the Lenovo website.
Well, you have to go for the P version as well for the professional one.
Right.
Which is this pretty much the same as the T60. But
so normally it's
wait,
it's $2,000.
You know, this is what I looked at here. I looked at the T60P and it's $1,919.
Yeah.
So they tack on another $1,000 for the Linux version?
And you get an OS installed.
Another $1,000?
Yeah.
It was $1,000 to take off Windows.
It's a lot of work, you know.
That's what you pay for somebody else to, you know, fix it for you anyways.
That's true.
New ThinkPad T-Series mobile workstations.
I put a link up on the bulletin board to the webpage that talks about the Linux stuff. Oh, there you go. Scroll all the way down to the bottom. There you go. Read the fine print now, my friend.
Only Novell SUSE is supported. The ThinkPad T60 mobile workstation does not come preloaded with SUSE Linux. Users must obtain SUSE Linux license from Novell. The ThinkPad T60 comes with a DOS entitlement only and ships with blank hard disk drive. SUSE Linux OS will be supported by Novell, while Lenovo will support hardware, ThinkVantage technologies, and drivers. And where's the price on this thing?
They don't have it on this site, but there was an announcement. If you go to, I think it was... Was a little
put it in your cart. You'll figure out how much the price is for it.
But there's no option to set Linux. It says Lenovo recommends Windows XP for your laptop.
Well, how do you order this thing then?
You can't yet. Not yet.
Well, wait, when's it going to be?
The website has not been updated yet.
To order, call 866-96-THINK.
Want to call them up and bust balls?
Should call them up on the...
We can call them.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
$3,000?
Let's call them up and ask them. Fuck it, man.
Yeah, but then we got to tell them we're recording the call.
So?
And
they won't go through it. They'll hang up.
Yeah, I don't want to get somebody pissed off at us and legal. The $3,000, that's... You know what? I was like hoping that after we sell the house and put money aside for a new one, that I might have a few bucks left over to buy a laptop. But I'm not going to have $3,000 left over to buy a laptop. That is insane. $3,000?
Yeah, well, it looks like you can purchase one with Windows XP installed and rip it off like we normally do now.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Oh, what are you doing there, man?
Oh, you want to see my new toy?
What do you got?
His new toy is making too much damn noise over here.
He's got another new toy? What the hell, man?
Yeah.
He's got a slot machine in his basement.
You got a slot machine in my living room.
That's practical.
See, you know, this
but
is...
But it's a Speed Racer slot machine, so I had to get it.
Yeah, and then you got to sit there and you wonder why nobody buys these Linux laptops.
Exactly. It's like, what the fuck, you know?
I mean, first off... You know, anybody who's interested right now, let's say a lot of people who are interested in a Linux laptop already have familiarity with Linux, run Linux, use Linux, are pretty comfortable with it.
Here's a question, though.
Huh.
It just popped into my head, so I'm going to interrupt on it. The vendor, and I can't remember the name, and I apologize, but the vendor that sells it with Linux preloaded, we interviewed
Linux
him at the show.
Penguin Computing, Emperor Linux.
Yeah. Emperor Linux.
Emperor. How much difference is the price on that?
It's probably pretty close in price, actually.
Well, see, I know they were a little bit more for their stuff because they put the operating system on for you.
Yeah, I mean, they have a price hike on there. I don't know. I'll go over to the site and find out. But still, I mean, you sit there and you look at the same product and you're going to spend $1,000 plus more for the same machine. And then you still have to buy a copy of SUSE. It doesn't come with any OS except DOS. And that's not even pre-installed.
I have never even spent $1,000 on a laptop, you know?
Right. I mean, and they wonder why no one will buy this. Because if, you know, I look at that and I say, I am pretty comfortable installing Linux on any kind of machine. You know, give me a laptop, I'll install it on there. I'll get as much of the hardware to work as I can. And I'll, you know, generally be happy with it. I've really never had a problem installing Linux on any laptop I've ever gotten. Now, I go and I hear that Lenovo's going to offer a Linux ThinkPad, and I'd be like, wow, that's really great.
Sounded awesome. I was excited.
Yeah. But at $1,000 more, you know, that to me is like a slap in the face.
And you still got to pay for the license yourself.
Right. So for somebody who's comfortable with installing Linux and using Linux.
And you have to do the install yourself, too. Yeah.
Right. You know, even if I didn't want SUSE, I mean, it's insane for me to pay that price, $1,000 more, when, you know, I could suck it up, buy the one with Windows on it.
Just rip it off. Yeah.
And, you know, rip it off, and I save myself $1,000.
Yeah.
With that freaking $1,000, I could go buy another laptop.
Yeah, pretty much.
Rip Windows off. I could buy, like, 3 laptops for that price.
All right, a T60P from those guys are $3,850.
Yeah, that's
insane.
Yeah, that's Emperor Linux.
From Emperor, yeah.
A lot of money.
Now, see,
or 44, depending on what you get.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, Emperor Linux caters more towards
scientific people, business people.
Yeah. You know, somebody who's not buying this for generally for personal use, I would assume.
Most likely, yeah.
You know, this is for, and that's just, that's
insane. Now, they're T60s, though, not the P's. They go from 2150 to 3000. So I guess depending on what your options and stuff are.
Again, you're looking at $1,000 more.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, someone like me, or you guys, or just about anybody, would be insane to spend $1,000 more for something they could do themselves.
Exactly.
Right.
And then, so then
but
you
see,
get
the people who buy this are businesses who don't care. That's basically what it's going to come down to. You're going to get a manager who calls up their IT department and says, I want this laptop. On it, and they're going to do, and they're going to go, okay, I can get this laptop for X amount of dollars, and I'll have it here next week for you. And that's the people who buy these.
Dude, if I was running a business and somebody did that, I'd slap them in the face. I'd be like, get the fuck out of here, man. Buy the damn thing and install SUSE Linux yourself. That's what my IT department's for.
Well, you could do that too.
Well, I don't know. Come on.
You're paying for the support. The knowledge to know
that. See, now maybe that's what we should do. We should all get together and we should decide on an inexpensive laptop, and then we can pool some resources and get a few of them and install Linux on there and get everything working, and then just sell them off, right?
There are startup companies that do this.
We can sell them for way less than $3,000.
Linux Certified is one, System 76, they're sub 300. There's a few others that do this.
How much is a system at sub 300?
They're all different prices. You got to go to these websites and check them out yourself. A lot of times, what they are is they're the same machines that are Dell, that are Sony. You know, what it is they just slap their own logo on there. You got to do a little bit of if you're going to get a no OS system, you got to do a little bit of research. I know Elixir has a database listing of vendors that will sell laptops with no OSs on them. And a lot of times they're the same systems that, you know, the Dells sell to you or Toshiba or whoever, but a lot less because there's no OS on there and there's no support for it. So if you're a person like us who's fairly knowledgeable, who's comfortable with Linux, maybe it's an option to pick up one of these no OS machines. You can get a pretty nice machine for a lot less.
Well, you know, let's talk about that support for a second. If you read the fine print, Lenovo is supporting the hardware, which they would support the hardware if you bought the Windows machine, too. And they say Novell is supporting the operating system. Well, Novell is going to support the operating system no matter what because you're buying it. So if you bought the Novell operating system and bought the Lenovo running Windows, you'd save yourself over $1,000 and get the same amount of support.
Pretty much.
So what the hell are they doing?
This is just smoke and mirrors, man. It's they're going through the motions. HP did this a while back. Dell did this a while back. They'll come out with a machine that's more money with Linux on it. They'll say, We tried selling it, but nobody wanted to buy these systems. There's no interest for Linux. We're discontinuing the service.
$3,000.
Same old shit.
I was so excited, too.
Me too, man. I was very disappointed when I saw these articles this morning saying what the real deal was. I was bummed.
Because if I'm not mistaken, that T-Series right there, or any of the T-Series, will do XGL or AIX.
What are they, ATI video cards?
Let me see.
More than likely ATIs.
For $3,000, I could get six laptops with Linux installed on it, six nice ones, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Dude, that's effing insane, man.
That's a lot of money, man.
You get a MacBook for just half that price. I get two MacBooks.
Screw MacBooks.
Oh my! You know what? Thanks, Pat. You just ruined my day. I quit.
Dan and his MacBook
Shit,
Pro.
Man, I'm going home. Oh, wait, I am home.
No, he's actually leaving.
Go get a couple beers, Dan.
But then he could be hitting the bathroom, too, so.
Yeah. Well, it sucks that this is what happened. I mean, everybody was all excited, and this is what the real deal is. Life goes on. What are you going to do? So I had some fun and games with my new AMD 64 system. Do you guys read my blog?
Speak on.
My blog posting?
No, I didn't tell you.
Basically, I picked up a really cheap AMD 64 system from Tiger Direct. Tiger Direct sells a lot of like bare bones kits. So I got a motherboard and an AMD 3200 combo, which is 2 gigahertz, 64-bit processor with a BioStar motherboard, which was NVIDIA-based. When I said it had an integrated 6100 NVIDIA video card. It had all integrated LAN, audio, the whole deal. I tried installing Debian testing on it, and well, actually, first I tried a Kubuntu using the regular installer, the graphical. About halfway through, it froze up during the install. So then I tried just doing Debian testing with the old, you know, non-graphical install, which is ncurse-based, which is fine. It installed fine, but what happened was once I was on it, about 15 minutes after starting the machine up, the LAN card would stop working. And then also I would get freezes after about 20, 25 minutes. So I went to the NVIDIA website. I tried compiling the nForce drivers for the audio and the network card, and I was having problems compiling it. Even though I had all the right packages, everything was matching. It was pissing me off. So what I wound up doing was I wound up getting the new patch version of Kubuntu, the alternate version, which is the non-graphical install, and that went on fine. Once I got it up and running, I was starting to have the same issues that I had with the Debian testing install. So then what I did was I downloaded the nForce drivers and I installed it, and this time they installed pretty easily. After I did that, the network interface wasn't going down anymore. It was working because it was using the NVIDIA drivers. And then I was still getting the freezes after about 20, 25 minutes. So then I said, you know what, let me try installing the graphics card driver, the NVIDIA graphics card driver. After I did that, man, everything was fine. Everything's working fine now, and it's pretty smoking. It's really fast coming up. It takes about 20 seconds to boot up into a graphical, into KDE. It's real fast, real snappy. I got a gigahertz, a gig of memory. I threw in an old 250 gig hard drive that I had, and it's pretty nice. I installed some games. There are some things about AMD 64 that I noticed. The 64-bit version of Mozilla Firefox, it's a little kludgy that there's no flash support for it, so what you should do is install the 32-bit version. Well, what's nice about the AMD 64 is if there's programs that act a little flaky in 64-bit environment, you can always install the 32-bit version and it should work okay. So that's what I'm doing. I'm installing the 32-bit version of Mozilla Firefox. There's a few other applications that are like that too. What they had in there was no flash, so what they had was Ganache, man. I know Dan talked about Ganache a while back. It's not quite there yet, Ganache.
Ganache, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at it in a couple of weeks. Well, probably a few months now. But, yeah. You had also said about Shockwave. And
you know what? Continue, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You know what I remembered? I got Crossover installed on the system. I think it finally kicked in and started and detected it.
Because I can run those, the places that you said too. There are a lot of I think there's some Shockwave, there's some Flash that runs, because I don't have Crossover, but those ones that you mentioned, I could play too.
PBS Kids.
Yeah, I can go to PBS Kids.
SesameStreet.org.
A lot of times, in the past, there used to be a hell of a lot of problems with the way sites were designed. They used some kind of JavaScript in there to detect the browser and require that you're running Internet Explorer and using a certain, you know, version of Flash for Windows. And if you didn't have that, even though you could actually use the Flash file, it wouldn't play because the script was detecting, was not detecting that you had what they thought
what it required. Takes.
Well, this thing, I was on the website and I got presented with the page saying, "I'm going to download Flash." So I did that, and Shockwave, and it started working right away. It was really weird. So I went to the Shockwave games website and I was playing a bunch of games. But I did remember that I had Crossover installed on the system. So it must have worked through that then. That's the only thing I could think of. Have you guys ever tried to get Shockwave working via Crossover or anything else?
No, I didn't do Crossover. But like I said, I didn't have any problems running the examples that you showed me. Or showed us. What about you, Link? What's your opinion? We'll let you get a comment in here.
Don't have one. Don't use that stuff.
Yeah, so back to the AMD 64 system. I got a really cheap system for about $220, and it's a real nice system. It's pretty fast. It's nice and lean. Nice case. I'm pretty happy now that I got everything, all the issues worked out. And Kubuntu looks pretty nice on it. I'll get into the multimedia stuff and see how the encoding is and see how it compares.
Here's a quote. "I'd buy that," Bronstein responded. "This isn't exactly a PC targeted at Joe User or even at Joe Enterprise.
What's this?
It's a powerful system.
Regarding the Lenovo?
Yeah, and it wouldn't hurt for the user to have some experience with Linux, too." Yeah, it's targeted to the jackass that would actually spend $1,000 more for it. I just don't get it. How come
people are stupid.
How come the guy here says...
We got to get someone from Lenovo or Novell on here. Actually, Lenovo, really. Because Novell's doing their thing. They're just selling their product, you know? It doesn't make sense, really, when you think about it.
They're saying they're providing full Linux support, but yet they're also saying that the Linux support...
Is from Novell,
but Lenovo supposedly, but it's for drivers. And the T60P pricing starting at $3,099 for the 14-inch model and $3,199 for the 15-inch edition, levels that a lot of users won't find cheap, especially when overall laptop pricing is sliding downward. But Agarwal said that the lack of pre-installation is really saving customers almost $200 per laptop. So if they would pre-install,
so we can charge $800 more.
They would install. It would cost $3,400. What is it? $3,300 for the 14-inch, and $3,500 or $3,400. Dude, I don't get it.
I tried to price the system earlier, but I couldn't get to. I couldn't get through the site.
Well, I'm looking at this article off of LXer. That was the real Lenovo laptop deal from Linux Planet. It's not a deal, man. That's a slap in the face. How do they get away with that? Who are they kidding? Who comes up with these ideas?
Marketing.
Why bother? How could they come up with this and honestly, with a straight face, announce something like this?
Because it's marketing.
We'll sell you a laptop, charge you twice as much for it, won't give you an operating system that you want, even though we say it's good for it, and you have to install it yourself.
It's a bargain.
It's the challenge.
There you go. How do you like that, Linux community? There's your laptop.
I don't think it's really positioning itself for the Linux community. I think that they're doing that for for the stupid suits out there, for the
business people, yep.
because yeah, they you know they don't know any better, and they think, hey, oh, this Linux, this big technical thing, you know, before they didn't give it any consideration because it was free, right? Didn't cost me money, must not be worth anything. Well, now, you know, hell, it's $1,000 more than Windows. It must be really sophisticated and
good.
Important. Let's buy some, right? I bet it's just, you know, a marketing ploy like that. I bet they're not even really trying to get anybody who actually would run Linux to buy one. Because we all are not stupid, right?
We hope not.
You know what? If it was maybe $100 more than a Windows XP one, maybe even $200. Because I know there's that whole thing where they, you know, they lose out on some of the promotional software that they get paid to install. Well, you know, maybe. But, you know, $1,000? No. That's too much.
Well, maybe when they figured it, when the suits figured it out, $1,000 is what they're losing by not installing Windows and all the crap that goes along with it.
That's just insane.
Well, there are other options, and you should definitely check them out.
Yeah, the other option is I'll just buy one and take the Windows license. And
that's an option, yeah.
The other option is this.
Buy a used
All one. You people out there listening can email us here at the Tech Show, and for $800, we will grab a PC just like, or a laptop just like Pat's, and install Linux on it for you and send it right to your door.
Alan will even drop by it. We'll deliver it.
We'll even put naked pictures of Dan on there for you or something.
Alan will deliver it naked.
No.
As long as Tim McGraw's in the...
Within driving distance.
We want to stop that now. Okay?
Tim McGraw.
we do want to stop that now.
Have you heard the Tim McGraw song? Not a song about Tim McGraw?
You know, you guys over there, you better stop when Alan says stop, because he's a lot bigger than both of you.
That's true. He's going to get us in a headlocks, wanting each arm.
You're going to piss him off, and he's going to smack you one of these days, and, you know...
You guys are all going in the fucking river this Sunday, Saturday.
See, you know what? Here's the problem. If Alan would just laugh it off and not really give a damn about it.
Well, I do.
It wouldn't have been.
What the hell do you think I've been doing for like 10 weeks now?
But the more he complains, it's just more fuel for the
fire. We've been doing it for 10 weeks. It's old. I put up with a lot of shit, but it gets old after a while.
I was, you know, all I was doing was looking out for, you know, you have to travel around because your wife wants to see him. I figured if there's people on your route, you could just drop
it. Yes. I would, yeah, we'll hand deliver.
Yeah, there you go.
$800 we'll hand deliver.
As long as it's...
Anywhere Tim McGraw, anywhere in the world Tim McGraw plays, right? We can get you one.
Coming to a state fair near you this summer.
That's right. You know what? Maybe you could get a deal with Tim McGraw where
he puts
you on the bill... Tim McGraw and Alan Metzler's traveling Linux cavalcade.
Yeah.
That would be good.
There you go.
Tim McGraw presents TLLTS.
Those people wouldn't know what the hell it was.
Oh. What were we talking about before Tim McGraw? Because I was just going to look it up on the web, on the site.
Laptops.
But what about laptops?
$3,000 is damn expensive for a Linux laptop.
I don't even know what I was going to look up now. Damn. And it was important, too. What else happened in the world this week there?
Excuse me.
That's special.
Yeah. It was.
So, Alan, have you done any video encoding for the Nokia?
I have not done anything yet. The one big problem I have with that right now is the card on there is only like 64 megs.
I
want to get a gig card for it on it, but I just haven't ordered one yet.
Does it take flash?
No, it's RSMMC.
Okay.
Which is like a pain in the ass. You have to order it because like there's no stores around here that have it, which sucks, but... Not a big deal.
Have you been using it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I keep notes and stuff on there.
Chuck, you always get these cool freaking toys. What the hell, man? I think that Alan should have to, you know, pay for my child for a few months.
Yeah.
And then I can get some cool toys for like, a while. We can, like, rotate or something.
All you
got to
do, man, is go get a job in New Jersey and commute an hour each way. It'd be golden.
Yeah, that does have a little bit to do with it.
The pay scale's a little higher on the other side of the river.
And then the fact that, you know, my kids have four legs, so, you know, only cats, so I don't really, they're really quite, you know.
Fluffy's not going to get any braces anytime soon.
Not anytime soon.
So well, neither is Stinky over here, but you know.
So you got lots of disposable income.
No, but I just tend to use, you know, when I want something, I save up for it and I buy the damn thing. Can't take it with me. Don't want to leave it for the wife, so.
You got to write up some articles, man. Got to do some.
Well, you don't
want to
leave money for your wife?
Hacking on Kia 770, I'm
trying to spend everything I can before she gets it.
Dude, do you know how to code at all? Let's just see if you can maybe write up an app or something.
No, I don't know how to code. Nah. It's, you know, like I said, I bought it because, you know, I used to use a Palm a Palm Pilot all the time. Actually, it was a visor on it, and I had that all the time. Had all my notes and stuff on there.
This is way nicer than a Palm.
And this is way. And I was going to buy a new one. I was going to buy one of the it was by Palm, and I don't remember the number for. But it was like, you know, $200. No,
it was Ford.
It's got to be on your side.
No, I wasn't farting. I was scratching my crotch.
But the thing was like $299. It had a screen that was half the size of that, and all it had was a wireless card on it. I was like, well, gee, for $50 more, you know, I'll end up with an 800x600 screen. It's small, but it's quite readable.
Have you tried using the VoIP on this?
Yeah.
How's it work?
It's pretty good.
Yeah. What kind of wireless is it? A G card or a B card?
It's BG.
Okay, so it does both. That's nice.
Yeah.
This is real sweet, man. I gotta get me one of these.
Yeah, I put Gizmo on there, which works really well. There's like I think there's like 25 cents of, they give you 25 cents on there, which is like, I think they said 10 or 15 minutes.
It's got the Opera.
For free.
It's got an X terminal. You got the Opera browser.
Yeah, the X terminal I added on there. There's a nice, real nice repository of stuff there for it.
You got some chat. You can play videos, audio, RSS.
It does audio and video.
Email. This is nice chat.
I've had I put the source show. I've streamed that on there with it without any problem.
Sweet, man.
You could actually save it if I had more of a the storage space for it. But until I get the gig card, I really can't do much in terms of
video.
What I eventually want to do is I had that script, which the MythBox would convert over for the iPod, which I had modified for the PlayStation on there. What I want to do is change the script to put it on that. So every evening I'll just download it, get the newest stuff that I watch.
I saw Aaron Newcomb. He was on the last episode of The Source. He was talking about the JZA, who we know, our friend out of Mexico, who goes on all these different shows and talks to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He was working with Aaron on getting a version of The Source exported to this.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's how.
That's what you had.
The source. You can go on there and click on their site. On it, you probably do it now if you go to their website on it. And under their downloads, they have a one that's specifically formatted for that.
Let's check it out.
Yeah, I don't have it as a bookmark, so you got to dig it up.
You know what? No, I'm sorry. Continue on.
No, go ahead.
When you're done, I made a mistake in my rant. Apparently,
Dan has made a mistake.
Apparently, we're not comparing apples to apples here. The T60P laptops that Lenovo is selling are tweaked out to the max.
To the max, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're not looking at the standard laptop here for $1,919.
What are they giving you, a big hard drive?
Well, they're maxing out the Intel dual-core processors. They're maxing out the memory, I think, to 4 gigs. You know, you're getting the top of the line everything. So this is a fully maxed out system, and what it basically apparently what this says over here at laptoplogic.com is that in the end you're paying $170 less than the Windows if it had Windows XP installed on it.
Okay.
So again, what it eventually comes down to is it's out of the price range, I would think, of a lot of Linux users.
Probably most of them, yeah.
Well, and even businesses, unless you can get your hard pressed to buy something like this.
Well, less so businesses, but you know, if you can get your business to, you know, if you convince them to let you run Linux in the first place on it, they may, you know, because like I said, my desktop system was like $8,000.
Oh, look at that. He's got the source, he's got a version of the show for Nokia 77, and it's an hour plus videos, 151 meg. It's pretty good.
Yeah, and if you click on it, it'll allow you to start streaming it.
Let's see.
But, you know, again, this is something I can't see as being a big seller.
I think it'll give you a choice.
I don't know. What do you buy a laptop like this for?
That I don't know because I don't really have a laptop at work, so.
Still, it's a hell of a lot of money.
Well, no, actually, no. What you would end up buying that for is, like, CAD work. Although it can run on a lot less systems than that. Companies would buy that for CAD work. Preferably if I could convince my company to buying me a laptop, it would be something like that for...
Check it out.
For the CAD work that I do.
Check it out.
If you push the little button up on the right, on the top there, the very small square, now up on the very top of the machine, where your pointer finger is.
This?
Left hand, yeah. The first button toward the edge there, that'll make the
full screen.
Full.
Oh, look at that. Check it out, Dan. This is streaming right now.
That's nice.
Of course, our bandwidth's probably going to hell.
Yeah, probably don't want to be doing that while we're doing the show. Because now we can't hear Link, right, Link?
I can hear you guys just fine. For now.
I killed it. That's awesome, man.
So this is going to be... This is geared at engineers. Is what we're saying.
Probably, but still, that's an awful lot of money.
Well, you said, you know, companies will pay that just because they can, you know, can say, well, it's supported, so they'll pay that for it.
So
you may not get a lot of them in a company, but there'll be a couple people in the company that will get one.
But generally speaking, ThinkPads have pretty much the best support, Linux support out there, don't they?
Probably, yeah.
I've been hearing.
I certainly haven't had any problems with mine, so, you know.
Still, it's a hell of a lot of money. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see what happens. But it would be nice if they could trickle that down to the lower end systems. I mean, really.
Right? It would be, but.
It would be nice.
It's too expensive. I don't know. I can imagine going to my boss, the supervisor, and saying, yeah, I want to get this laptop. It's three times as much
it's
as
only
what we spend on
laptops.
Yeah. It's three times more than what we spend on everybody else's laptop. But I got a hell of a lot of horsepower to edit text files.
Woo!
Yeah, but the people who are going to buy this aren't going to be editing text files.
No, they're not.
That's
you know?
True.
They're going to be doing heavy-duty simulations on them. Like I said, you know, a lot of CAD work, which is very graphic intensive. Stuff like that.
There we go.
So, Link, have you got around to playing with your TV capture card at all?
Nope. I haven't done a damn thing with it yet.
Well, I got an article coming out in the October issue of Linux Pro Magazine on MIT-TV.
Cool.
Yeah.
I look forward to that article.
I only wrote it about 3 months ago.
Hey, there's always a 3-month delay
on
this thing.
We're so spoiled, you know, when it comes to, like, you know, instant gratification on the internet and with publications.
Yeah.
Is a long lag.
Did you send in the invoice yet?
Yes.
All right. Did you get paid already?
Not yet.
You probably get paid when, like, around the article comes out.
Yeah.
You know what sucks about that is they pay you through PayPal, and PayPal takes, like, that cut out of it.
Yeah, 15% or whatever.
It's not that much.
No, what is that, like, 5?
It's a few percent. But it's enough, you know.
Yeah.
It's like enough to buy a copy of Sled, I think.
Yeah.
To go with your Lenovo laptop, which won't ship with it. Hey, Link, does your ThinkPad have support for 3D graphics?
Support for what?
3D acceleration.
Um, You know what? I really don't know for sure.
Do you know what the chipset is on that? The video chipset?
Not without digging it out. No, I don't.
You lazy bastard.
I can look it up real quick.
All right, it's up to you. What's your, you still have battery life on that thing? I know you bought it used.
Yeah, I did buy it. I think I have maybe a couple of hours of battery life on it. Really?
Oh,
so what? You know, it runs really, really well. I mean, it really does.
You want to hear a funny laptop story? This is good.
Does it explode?
I'm sure a lot of people who do IT and administration have heard this 100 times before. My wife's out in Oregon right now. And she's staying at a Marriott hotel. It has high-speed internet connection in the room. Unfortunately, it's not Wi-Fi. So she calls me up, and she's like, I can't connect to the network in the hotel room. And I'm like, okay, what is it? It's a high-speed internet connection. Did you pull out the wireless card and plug it back in? Because sometimes you have to do that. You pull it out, plug it back in, pull it out, and plug it back in. It reinitializes itself. It's like, no, it's wired connection in the room. And she's like, there's a connection coming out, and I plugged it into the back of the computer. And I'm like, well, that's odd. It should have picked it up automatically. I thought maybe the Ethernet card's disabled, so I had her go into the network configuration through KDE. And she said, I said, what's it say for ETH0? She's like, it says it's activated. And I said, okay, well, try this. Go in, activate it. You know, click on the properties, deactivate it, and reactivate it again. And make sure it's set for DHCP. Well, it is. And she says, okay, nothing's happening. I'm like, it should be picking it up automatically. So I say, okay, look on the back of there and tell me if there's lights flashing on the card where it plugs into, because I'm not sure if hers has little LEDs that tell you whether it's getting
connected or not. Yeah, whether it's working or not.
And she turns around and she's like, well, I want to make sure I'm plugging it into the right place. And I'm like, and she's like, it's where it looks like there's like three little computers around it. I'm like, that sounds, you know, it sounds like the right place. She's like, yeah, I took the phone cord and plugged it in there. And I'm like, wait, you did what? She's like, I said to her, yeah, you really can't plug the phone cord, or you can't plug it into the modem because Ethernet jack is a little bigger. It won't fit. So like, I plugged the phone cord in there. And I'm like, no, you can't use the phone cord. You have to use an Ethernet cable. They're different things. Oh. And she dug through her laptop bag. She didn't have an Ethernet cable. So I said, well, just go down to the front desk. Borrow. They should have one for you. You could borrow or whatever. And she did that, and she plugged it right in and said it just came right up. You know, no problem. So I was like, yeah. How many times do we hear that? I don't know why I'm not getting it either. Or, you know, that's when they're like plugging the modem into the Ethernet connection.
Well, they do. That happens at work a lot too. Even in the office, because they have our Ethernet and the phone are in like one gang plug. It's like, you know, a bunch of four, and because of, you know, the system all uses the wide plugs, so you can plug them all into the wrong one. And of course, they're all white,
right.
So and none of them are labeled. So it's like, anything yet? Okay, try another one. Anything yet?
It's like tech support. I'm sure tech support people got a phone call, someone saying that they're. Their computer's coffee cup holder broke.
Yeah.
But, you know, she felt like an idiot when I told her, you know, you got to go get an Ethernet cable, because she didn't realize there was that big of a difference. But now she'll never have that problem again.
Live and learn.
Yeah. But,
that's what's good about your wife compared to some of the users that I have to, you know, work with at work.
But you know,
you can tell her something and she learns.
Yeah, I got to give her credit though. I mean, she everywhere she goes, she takes a laptop, never has problems. You know, goes to wireless access areas, unless it's a pay wireless access service, then she can't really get on. But anything else, you know, she takes it to Panera, she takes it wherever she goes, gets a connection, it runs Kubuntu, never a problem. The latest version of Kubuntu, and she does a hell of a job with it. Takes it everywhere. Does her, you know, pulls pictures off her camera with it, downloads music, purchases music from all of P3.com. Yeah, she does it all. Hooray.
That's great, man.
It is.
Life is good.
Been purchasing music for a year now and still has only used 50 cents for that account.
Oh, my God. I just can't believe how much music she gets off of. She went out. This is the way she did it. She went out to some, like, service where she gave them... $20 and they gave her a card or an account number for that $20. Then she goes over to All of MP3, subscribes with that account number, so they're not actually don't have access to her credit card or anything.
Yeah, you can do that with some of the credit cards too. They'll give you a temporary number for like the internet stuff.
And she just she's same $20. She's been using it for like 3 months now, and she's gotten she's like comes. She'll go into a place and she'll buy a bunch of music and then she'll put it on her player and when she's bored with it, she'll go out and buy a ton more. So, you know, the only problem I could see with all of MP3.com is they're really trying to crack it down.
Eventually it's going to get closed,
yeah.
Yep.
They're being pricks about
it. Matter of time.
They are being pricks. But her one
complaint... But it depends. If they can keep the Russian... officials paid off more than the American officials can pay them off, they'll stay up.
The only complaint she ever has is when she goes, you know, when you have that flash issue. She goes to a site, she wants to see something requiring Flash 9.
Yeah.
You see more and more of that lately.
Or Flash 8, I'm sorry. I don't think 9's been released. Yeah, when you said about the Shockwave thing, I got all excited because I thought maybe they like slipped out a newer version or something or an update on the sly there, and nobody knew about it. But what a bummer, right, Link?
Yeah, what he said.
How's your daughter liking that Indigo?
She's still in there playing on it, man. It's like a week straight now.
She
can hardly get her off to come out and eat something.
Has she updated her MySpace account or her Zanga account yet?
Well, I wanted to shut them down. You know, I made her I installed what the hell is it? The weblog software that like Pat and Allen use. What are you guys using?
Huh?
Which?
Hello, Pat and Allen. Hello,
Squid.
Pat and Allen.
What
blog software are you running?
WordPress.
Oh, yeah. WordPress.
WordPress, that's what it is. I installed WordPress for my website, made her a little WordPress site. She still hasn't updated it. I told her I wanted her to use that instead of the, you know, and I wanted to close down her MySpace and Zanga accounts because, you know, I don't like those.
They're virus spreaders, pretty much.
But, well, it's not just that. I you know, I don't like all the stuff that goes on there. And she still hasn't done it. So what I'm going to have to do is cut her internet access off until she decides she's going to do what I tell her to.
You know, it would be quite ironic if you started catching messages to your daughter's account from some guy, and he was trying to, you know, get her to meet her, and you went out to meet this guy, and it was a TLTS listener.
I got a TLTS t-shirt.
So he comes walking up with that six-pack of beer and a pack of condoms, expecting to meet some young... you know, victim, and you're standing there in your TLLTS t-shirt with a baseball bat, and he's like, hey!
You're Link!
You're Link, I know you! I brought you some beer and condoms.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
Guess what I brought you.
I dread that day when my daughter learns about MySpace and Zanga.
By then, it'll be something completely different.
I'm telling you now, man, just block them now.
It should.
Block them now. Put a filter in. And
what's that proxy server called? Dan's Garden?
There's Dan's Guardian. You could probably do it through Squid, too.
Yeah.
Guy who I set up Linux at work, he was asking me about him, and we were looking around for that stuff. A proxy server so he could block sites so that his daughter doesn't go to them. But she's doing all right with it. She's liking the machine, you know, with the Kubuntu.
Oh, she loves the machine. She loves the machine.
What's she running? What is she running on there again?
OS. She's running a 500 megahertz Indigo iMac with OS 10 on it.
You gotta get her running Linux.
I thought about it, but she wanted to try OS 10. When she gets pissed off because it's slow, then I'm gonna put Debian on there. So you have to. There's methodology behind her. You have to put the OS 10 on there, and then eventually she's going to get pissed off, and she's going to say, "I'm only using this because it's slower than mom's computer or something like that, right?"
Uh-huh.
And when that happens, I can say, "Well, you know, I can speed it up a little bit." I just put Debian on there. And then that should be a convert for life.
She's gonna want Vista when it comes out.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Because all her friends are running Vista.
Nobody is gonna want Vista when it comes out.
I don't think so.
Alan, what's this from? Mom, Dad, don't touch it. It's evil. Time Bandits at the end, remember? When they opened up the toaster oven and there was that piece of evil.
Smoking evil.
It's evil. That's a great movie.
These things just pop into your head, huh?
Yeah, no, I was thinking about this, you know, putting this down. That gives you that ogre-like talk.
The hell is that?
It's a clip to the eyesight.
And you're sticking it in your mouth?
Yeah.
And she's on a lot of different things.
Dane, you don't know where that thing's been, man.
I know where it's been. It's been in my room for so long.
That's a scary thought, man.
And then I was thinking about...
But the dog could have peed on it.
And so what?
throw that away now.
And I was thinking about the cable system. We have Cox Cable down there in Virginia, which is... I don't like digital cable that much. I mean, it's a nicer picture, but every time you change the channel, it's like a two-second delay.
Oh, it's terrible.
I hate that.
It's black screen while you do it. It's like click. Okay, here's the new picture.
And then it's like... Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, depending on
the
station.
And then every so often, it like artifacts out for a second, like... And we got the G4 Tech TV down there now. Ugh. Finally get to watch it a little bit.
You will not want to.
Well, I watched The Man Show reruns on there.
Is that the first series or the...
The
original
I saw was the original guy. Okay. I actually because that was when it was the good. Episode.
The new ones since what the hell's his name? I don't remember the guy's name now that left.
Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla.
Yeah. Since they've left, I think the show sucks.
Yeah, I know.
With the host.
It's become one giant fart joke, and it's really like not
it's
funny.
Really,
after
you know, it's like really misogynistic too.
Yeah,
I mean, the original one was like tongue in cheek, you know, and you know, it had like, it wasn't hostile towards women. I don't think as much, you know. But this next one, it's like, if I was a chick in the audience, I'd be afraid to get a baseball bat upside my head and end up in a dumpster rape.
Yeah, it was more exploitative of women for the first one, but that was okay because you know, chicks on trampolines at the end.
Well,
yeah,
and they exploited themselves, too. I mean, they poked as much fun at... But, you know, the other one is like... The first one I saw was Alex Rogan, isn't it?
I think that's the new one,
He comes out screaming and yelling and all, like, fired up, like he's on roids or something. It's like a date rape gone bad.
Yeah.
Jesus. He's all steroided out.
It was horrible.
He's got some roid rage going.
Can that ever be good, though?
Man.
Girls on trampolines, yeah, that was it.
You know what pisses me off? I've been listening to Security now. I've listened to two episodes today, which isn't a bad show.
I like that one. It's pretty good.
But what ticks me off about it is when they start talking about, like, they were talking about the wireless exploits, and they're like, well, it only affects, you know, it affects Windows, but they never mention whether it affects Linux or not when they were talking about some of the security.
Well, they're very Mac and Windows-centric on that show.
I wish they'd... Like, the only one who ever brings up Linux is, like, Leo. Which is odd, because on Twitter, he never brings up Linux.
Actually, the last episode, he said that he installed Ubuntu on a laptop, and he was really liking it.
Oh, he did? Was this the one post-Cory Doctorow?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the last one.
Right. Yeah. Linux Log is going to have their 100th episode. He's going to do a video episode.
Cool. We should have to do one of those and really annoy everyone.
We'll point it at the white wall and just leave it there.
There we go. And you can bring it up.
Do hand puppets.
And
everyone has to do a hand puppet.
Dave Yates is coming on our show in a couple
two weeks. And Chess.
And, you know, listening to him.
Chess Griffin.
He sounds like he's really nervous about coming on our show.
I don't know why.
I don't understand, man.
It's just like hanging out with a bunch of buddies, man. Shooting the breeze.
There should be no reason. He does a great show, and
Chess,
you know,
Griffin
always,
will be nice.
Both of them coming on in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm not talking about Chess right now. He's got his own thing going on. I'm talking about Dave.
Dave is cool, man.
Yeah, I like his podcast.
Someone actually confused his show for our show.
Yeah,
They sent us an email.
I was like, wait, this sounds female. It can't be our show.
The girl's like, you guys got to be careful when you're driving your car and doing your podcast. And Dan's that's not us.
Well, she wrote back. I don't know if I replied and included that email to the text show, but she wrote back to me and said, "Oh, I'm sorry."
Yeah, you did.
But I do listen to you guys too, and I really like your show. Keep it up.
So feel free to write to us, too.
Yeah, we like to hear your feedback. We got a lot of feedback last week on the RSI stuff. A handful of feedback.
Sure.
Yeah.
It was kind of mixed response. You know, positive, negative. See, my take on the whole thing with Deborah Quilter is, I mean, I do think, and I do know that RSI is a serious problem. And it's one of those things that does creep up on you, and it hits you pretty suddenly, and it's pretty catastrophic once it affects you. And I, you know, honestly, I'm not sure how is it inevitable that you get RSI if you've been using computers for so long,
or
is it how serious is the risk? And you know, a lot of times, particularly people like Deborah, or people who are really into the health thing and are really serious about it, present an image that is, they're really gravely concerned, and that is their focus. And I don't, I don't think she's bullshitting or anything, though. And I think it is a serious problem, but, there's probably a good possibility that majority of our audience who uses computers might go through the rest of their lives without ever having any problems, too. So it's a tough thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it doesn't hurt to practice good form, posture, and take breaks.
Definitely,
take many breaks.
The smokers get that break every freaking hour. You should too.
Yeah.
It's funny because this is where I work. Like in the summertime, the secretaries take a break. They actually call over the PA system, like break time, and everybody goes on a break. Except our department never takes a break.
When I work nights at the place I work now, I used to work it's actually early evenings on it. We have a fab there, so people are always dressed up in the bunny suits to go inside the fab, and they used to have a code where I guess one of them would go on break, and then they would just pick up the phone, hit the intercom, and just punch in a couple of like digits, so you'd hear just a beep 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 over the intercom, and that would be like the call for everybody else to do it. When I figured it out, I used to go down in the break room on it by myself, at weird times, and just hit the code and see who came out. Because it takes like 10 minutes because you got to get undressed out of your gowns to come out into the rest of the building.
Are you a stripper? Are you in a tranny club?
No. In if you work inside of a fab,
right,
get gowned up on it. It's called a bunny suit, or at least that's the nickname for it. But it was funny to see who would come out and then be like looking around going, who hit the button? And he'd like sitting there drinking a Coke. It's things you do when you're bored at night.
You worked a graveyard shift a lot?
I worked, it was 3 to 11. So it wasn't graveyard, but it was still, there was only like, besides the people in fab, there was only like three other people in the building, so. And fab people you never saw unless they happen to be on break, because I can't go in there. All right, play us out. It's 10:29.
Let's do some Frapper shout-outs, man. We actually got quite a few additions. The last episode, we asked people to go on there and add themselves. We'll ask it again.
And they did, yeah.
If you're new to the show, please go to our Frapper webpage and put yourself on there. We actually got some interesting ones this time around. We got, let me see, RMJB.
You're looking at Frapper on there.
From,
cool.
From Trinidad and Tobago. We've got Zorak from Antarctica.
Zorak? Z-O-R-A-K?
Yeah.
From the Space Goes Coast to Coast show?
I guess so. He's in Antarctica.
That would be good there.
Yeah, we got Chuck from Granville Summit,
Antarctica.
PA.
Send us a postcard.
We've got Chalk One from Kelowna, B.C., Canada. We've got, Ramon Condejas from Los Angeles, California. We've got Jason Ballou from Wales, Maine. We've got Jared from Laverna, Tennessee. We've got Alvaro Romotar from Guyana.
Avril Lavigne.
Alvaro Romotar.
Get your mind out.
We've got Kristen Bishop from Irving, Texas. Richard Guerin from Beaton, Ontario, Canada. We've got St. Pete from Tyrol, Australia.
Let's see. We've got Oliver Rodenhagen from Germany, Georgia. Victor Chacon from San Dimas, California. Is that where Bill and Ted's from, San Dimas? We've got Dirk doesn't have a location. And we've got Brian Reichard, our buddy, from Bethlehem, PA. And we've got John Williams from San Antonio, Texas. I wonder if that's John Williams, the composer, who does the Star Wars and the Superman and Indiana Jones. That would be cool if it was.
I have no clue. Do we have a post office address?
Do we?
Well, I don't know. There was a request on the IRC.
Well, when I send the DVDs out, I put my address as the return address.
Okay. Send it to Pat.
Yeah. Shoot me an email. What else? We got next week we're talking to Christian Lanehart, the guy from Demo Recorder. And in 2 weeks we got Chess and Dave.
That's going to be a good show.
Yeah, it should be fun. And Dave, don't be nervous, man. You listen to us, we listen to you. It's like hanging out with some friends.
We're going
to
rip him a new asshole when he gets...
It's totally casual.
Yeah, it would be nice and used lube.
Jesus. It's totally casual. Ignore Dan.
It'll be the KY show.
Everybody else does. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not nice.
Beep, beep. Just as long as you're aware that it's not nice.
Wait, where's the Frapper map? What am I looking at? Ah, screw it, I'll look later. Oh, wait, here we go. Frapper map. Where do you see the... Oh, John Williams.
What, Antarctica?
Yeah, where is the guy? I don't even see a tag on there from Antarctica.
Keep going down.
Yeah, you have to go to Antarctica first, Dan.
No, you'll see the listing and click on the guy's name and you'll see it pop up.
Where is it? How far down is it?
There it is.
Zorak.
There you go.
It's cool. I wonder if he's actually from Antarctica. I mean,
I know. It could be somebody just goofing. There was one comment in there was like, you guys are hot.
That was me. No. That was my secret message.
Oh, and also, Judlin. Thanks to Judlin for giving us the South Park version of the Linux Link Tech Show. That was pretty cool, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Dave, thank you, man. That was pretty funny. Even though Link was crying that his version looked angry, I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, why am I angry? What the hell? Arr.
All right.
Kick his ass. I'll kick his ass.
Well, according to...
Good night, everybody, from me. So
I'd have to double check this, but according to our Feedburner stats, we have 1,400 subscribers to the Feedburner since MP3 file.
Cool.
But I wonder how much the actual downloads are.
Much more.
Plus,
than
you know,
that.
We have people that get them from our
mirrors,
from our mirrors, and
I
stuff
think there's
like
a significant number more.
Oh yeah.
There's Dave Yates right there on our Frapper map.
Dave.
He kind of sounds like President Bush a little bit. His voice. It's pretty funny.
How many people are total are on our Frapper map?
I don't know. What do we got? Six, seven?
Six or seven people?
Six or seven. Something like that.
How can you find that out? It should
be all the way at the top. Go up to the top. Scroll back up.
Whoops.
There you go.
Oh, 670. This says 671.
Yeah, sometimes the count goes a little off from one to the other.
In three places. Oh,
I don't know how that works.
All right, we're going to play out of here tonight. We got another song from Jonathan Colton, Mr. Fancy Pants, from The Thing this week. Enjoy it.
This has been episode 153.
Is it 153? Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is.
I want to thank everybody for listening.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Alan actually talked.
I do every now and then, yes.
Alright, here we go.
It's over.
No. What the hell?
Wrong one.
Chances are your pants are not as fancy as the pair of very fancy pants that Mr. Fancy Pants will wear. When everybody's marching in the Fancy Pants Parade, he's gonna pass the test, he's gonna be the best in terms of pants. You look in every catalog, you shop in every store, cause even though you have 100 pants, you want some more. And suddenly you see the greatest pants you've ever seen, and even though you know it's gonna cost a lot of dough, you have to have the world's best pants. Say a little prayer for Mr. Fancy Pants. The whole world knows it's all
big announcement and the trophy goes to you. You thought you had some fancy pants and now you know it's true. You look at Mr. Fancy Pants and hold the trophy high. Everybody cheers while he's blinking back the tears. He doesn't even have the best pants. Say a little prayer for Mr. Fancy Pants. It's all he had, but don't feel bad. He'd do the same to you.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
There. Now everybody could be happy.